Good afternoon. Well, isn't it a good day today? Very good day. I won't use the other word, because my wife has threatened me if I use the glorious word anymore. Said first time it was cute, the second time it's okay, and after that it's been repulsive. So. But I think it is a glorious day. But not just because of the weather or because we're rich and healthy, because we drive fast cars, have beautiful homes, nice clothing. You know, there's something else to me that makes it a glorious day. Because what God has given us to understand, no matter what these other physical things are, the things that we have been given to understand makes this a very fine day. And I'm speaking of God's statutes and judgments. I have a definition here I wanted to read of some of the words used for judgment and statute. Judgment is a separating, a selection, opinion, or decision given concerning anything, concerning justice and injustice, right and wrong. We heard some of God's instructions today. Also a decree, condemnation of wrong, the decision one passes on the faults of others. That'd be a judgment. One's mind view, judgment, opinion. As we read God's judgments, that's his. You could say that was his opinion. That's his mind view concerning what ought to be done. Resolve, purpose, and intention. Those are all part of God's judgments and statutes. That which is established or defined, like a single law or an ordinance, an appointed portion of labor, a task, a defined limit. These are all things that are in God's Word. We read of statutes and judgments. But you know, the world, what we think of the United States, we kind of think it's a world. Of course, it's not. But we're straying farther and farther away from God's judgments and statutes. We know that the Ten Commandments have been ordered out of courtrooms, out of public buildings. They've been done away. They can't be in anything to do with the state or federal government. Intelligent design, which some states have said that we're going to start teaching in science classes. Some judges have said, no, that cannot be in a science class. It might come up in another class. I don't know. We'll wait and see. They said it's not scientific, intelligent design. And even pictures of George Washington ordered out of one classroom. I'm sure most of you have seen the picture, George Washington kneeling like in the snow and his hat off and he's looking down. I heard on the news, I think it was Paul Harvey, some woman wrote in and said, he's not praying. He's measuring the snow. Get that picture back in where it belongs. I mean, you know, that's, people can find all kinds of things. It seems like our court system is doing like almost opposite what Mr. Hudson was talking about that the scribes and Pharisees were doing, just expanding and making it more difficult. They're coming across the same way, forbidding people to practice God's statutes and judgments. You know, this world has just lost sight of and rejected God's righteous statutes and judgments. But we are to be growing in that understanding, as we've already grown today, I'm sure. In the sermon today. So it's still a glorious day because what we understand, and we understand why this is happening. We're not just, sitting there down and out because we see what's going on. Let's look at 1 Corinthians chapter 1. And verse 20, it says here in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 20, where is the wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the disputer of this age? In other words, that's what we're thinking as we heard this morning. Where is the wise? Where is the wisdom? Where is the wisdom in what judges are doing? Where is the understanding there? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of this world? For since the wisdom of God, the world through wisdom did not know God, it pleased God through the foolishness of the message preached to save those who believe. For the Jews request a sign, and the Greeks seek after wisdom. But we preach Christ crucified, to the Jews a stumbling block, and to the Greeks, foolishness. What we preach is a stumbling block to religious people, and of course it's foolish to the wise and the educated. But to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God and the wisdom of God, because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. So our wise men, because they have forsaken or never knew God's statutes and judgments, are making some really foolish decisions. But we see in also going on now in verse 26, says, "For you see your calling, brethren, that not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called, but God has chosen the foolish things of the world to put to shame the wise, and God has chosen the weak things of the world to put to shame the things that are mighty, and the base things of the world, and the things which are despised, God has chosen, and the things which are not, to bring to nothing the things that are." God has chosen the weak. I've often thought, I've been baptized since 1967, and I'm thinking, man, what is with this guy? I'm talking to myself, all these years. And I just know that so many of the wise men of this world would have much sooner accomplished God's will in their life, I think. I don't know. I may be wrong. Maybe they'd be more stubborn or whatever. But God definitely has chosen the weak and the foolish of this world. Let's look at Romans chapter 1. Romans chapter 1, verse 18. When men reject God's word, they get into some really foolish areas of belief. Romans chapter 1, verse 18. "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness, unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness," or they like hold it back, "because what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse." The very wisest men, the most educated men, are constantly promoting things that are ungodly. We were talking about banning God's law from any legal building, from state buildings. And they have forgotten what the laws of this particular nation were founded on. As we've talked before about how in the Supreme Court building, you know, God's law is all over that thing. You know, Moses is in the center there, at the entry. Inside, there's Ten Commandments. And, of course, it would be kind of hard to get rid of. They'd have to tear down the building to do away with that. But what God was, God's law was used in this nation to establish the law. And it's been rejected. They have forgotten and rejected his law. They're very wise men. I've heard one man say, he was talking about something. He said, he's a very smart man, but he's not very bright. And that's what I always think of when I see these rulings and what men come up with. Very smart. But boy, that wasn't very bright. You know, to say that there is no God. And really, you know, that's making you out to be a fool. You know, the History Channel I was watching, it had a whole, almost a series, and it seemed the whole thing was about just proving that there could not have been a flood that covered the earth. The Noachian deluge. They said there's not enough water. There's not enough water to do it. Well, I thought, well, I wonder how much water there is. So I looked up a few things. You know, the Atlantic Ocean averages over 11,000 feet deep on an average. Its deepest point in the Puerto Rico Trench is over 28,000 feet deep. I mean, we're talking 6 miles deep. There's a big ditch out there, and it's a big one. The Tonga Trench is over 35,000 feet deep, almost 7 miles of water. The Maria Ana Trench off Guam is almost 36,000 feet deep. There's lots of water out there. It's just in a hole. I mean, if the earth was smooth, we all better have a boat. And a lot of dry rations, because we'd all be underwater. And what about the poles? I mean, it's deep ice. Deep ice on both poles. Mr. Waterhouse said one time, I guess he was serious. Was he ever not serious? Sure he was. He said, you know, God had the flood, and then he said he took all the water to the poles and froze it. Well, that was kind of simplifying it, but I think there is plenty of water. I just think there's plenty of water. And besides, God created water, and he can uncreate it or whatever. So I think there was enough water. They had some other points. If there was that much water and it all evaporated, there would be so much moisture in the air, we'd all drown. We'd just be walking around, we'd drown. I mean, humidity would be so high. So, I mean, when people reject God and his statutes, and they come up with some ideas. So, and of course, evolution is constantly, it's like almost being crammed down our throat. This fish, what is it? The coelacanth? Is that how you say it? It's been extinct 70 million years, but they find them now. And what I thought was interesting was there's been no fossil records of that fish for 70 million years. From 350 million years back to 70 million, all kinds of fossils. All at once, there's no fossils. That thing's extinct. And then they find the fish. They find people over off the Indian Ocean that have been eating the fish for years. So, you know, there's something wrong with this. But it's a very interesting fish. It's very primitive, as they say. It's a very primitive fish. This is just a living fossil. I mean, this thing's just almost a shell that just somehow can move about. It's so primitive. I looked up some information about this fish. It says it's a formidable predator. This large fish uses specialized sensory organs to locate its prey. Its eyes are lined with reflecting cells that enhance vision at dimly lit ocean depth. Doesn't sound real primitive. A pressure-sensitive lateral line runs down each side of the body. And this thing evolved 350 million years ago. It was ahead of its time. The row of sensitive cells enables the fish to detect movement of potential prey in its vicinity. Indentions on either side of the snout lead to a jelly-filled cavity in the skull. This sensory system may help the fish to detect weak electric signals emitted by other living organisms. Well, isn't that something for a primitive little old fish? Of course, before 1938, it was suspected that it had become extinct 70 million years ago. And I thought this was interesting. No sighting of the fish had been reported in recorded history. This thing just hid out till it was time to be found, I guess. And there was no fossils. Well, it says the fossils were common in sedimentary rocks from before 70 million years ago. And they are virtually absent from the more recent fossil record. So, I mean, the wise men sometimes can really get off on some things they do not understand. I turn on the radio times when I make my final trip home. I usually drive several hours a day, and I just want to hear something, you know, besides the roar of engines and Spanish language. And so I turn on the Michael Savage. He's a madman, you know. But he was reading from the book of Leviticus. And I mean, he was, and I'm thinking, boy, God raised up stones to, if nobody else is going to preach, he's going to raise up a stone, because this guy is, he's really radical. But I mean, he was reading, and he said, I'm going to quit that. He said, don't get me started on Ezekiel. If I do, I won't stop. you'd have to hear that guy to know what I'm saying. But he said he's reading from Leviticus 14, which he wasn't. He was reading from Leviticus 26. Let's turn there, if you would. Leviticus 26. I've heard it years ago, but it's been a long time since I heard anyone read this on the radio. Because most religious people don't want to read this, and it's sure the rest of the people don't want to hear it. Leviticus chapter 26, notice verse 3 through 9. If you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and perform them, then I will give you rain in its season. The land shall yield its produce, and the trees of the field shall yield its fruit. And as any nation on earth, I mean, this nation has produced so much in the line of food. Verse 5, your threshing shall last till the time of vintage, and the vintage shall last till the time of sowing. And my wife still has canned peaches in the basement. It's still there. And in the fridge, and you shall eat your bread to the full and dwell in your land safely. I will give peace in the land, and you shall lie down, and none will make you afraid. And I will rid the land of evil beast or wild beast. And the sword will not go through your land. And we haven't had the sword go through our land. until a few years ago, I guess you could say, in the terrorist attack. Because we've always maintained bases in other countries and do your fighting over there on their soil. But God has protected us. But then, in verse 14, and this is where he really was reading from. But if you do not obey me and do not observe all these commandments, and if you despise my statutes, and if your soul abhors my judgments, and we're witnessing this in this nation, when our courts and our education system, it's like they despise God's judgments, and you do not perform all my commandments, but break my covenant, I will do this to you. And this is where he really was making his point. I will even appoint terror over you. We live in an age of terror, terrorism. And it's becoming so familiar. It's just becoming part of life. When I was young, I didn't hear of terrorism. But now it's every day. God says, I will appoint terror over you, wasting disease and fever, which shall consume the eyes and cause sorrow of heart. And you shall sow your seed in vain, for your enemies shall eat it. I was watching a farm report, and they're estimating that within 10 years, the United States will be importing wheat. We've always exported wheat, long as I can remember. It's been one of the good things of our balance of payment is we were able to export grain. And I will set my face in verse 17 against you, and you shall be defeated by your enemies. Those who hate you shall reign over you, and you shall flee when no one pursues you. And it seems that that is happening. I hear people on the street, at the job, on the radio, not agreeing with what is going on with the rulings of our government. And it's like they're powerless. They can't do anything. Oh, I want my child to be able to pray at school. I think the Ten Commandments should be there, but they're powerless to do anything. Because I guess they were there, but no one paid attention anyway, so God says, well, might as well have them taken out. Because no one wants to hear them anyway. But those who hate you shall reign over you, and you shall flee when no one pursues. And if you do any traveling now, you're nearly strip searched to get on an airplane, and there's nobody pursuing. But because of the fear that's come in the land. In verse 43, the land also shall be left empty by them and will enjoy its Sabbath while it lies desolate without them. I don't know how many years this nation's been existent and it hasn't observed the land Sabbaths, that's for sure. So I don't know if that could indicate how long it's going to lay desolate till it's laid there and rested the number of years it should have. They will accept their guilt because they despised my judgments and because their soul abhorred my statutes. Well, we certainly should not fit in any of that description as being called by God. You know, the kings of Israel were to be familiar with God's commandments, his statutes, and judgments. That was one of the stipulations. In Deuteronomy, let's turn to Deuteronomy chapter 17. You know, and we are to be kings and priests. Are we not also to be very familiar and to be doing, as it says here, in Deuteronomy 17, in verse 18. Also it shall be when he sits on the throne of his kingdom that he shall write for himself a copy of this law in a book from the one before the priests, the Levites. And it shall be with him, and he shall read it all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Eternal his God and be careful to observe all the words of this law and these statutes. In verse 20, that his heart may not be lifted up above his brethren, that he may not turn aside from the commandment to the right hand or to the left, that he may prolong his days in his kingdom, and he and his children in the midst of Israel. It's saying that if people do not keep refreshing their mind on God's way, his commandments, his statutes, his judgments, that they will forget them and pretty soon become confused over what is right and what is wrong. I might just read a couple examples of statutes and judgments. We turn over to Deuteronomy 19. Because God was speaking here to a government that was on the earth, physical government, but this is the mind of God. In Deuteronomy 19, verse 15, one witness shall not rise against a man concerning any iniquity or any sin that he commits. By the mouth of two or three witnesses, the matter shall be established. You can't take one person's word and convict someone. I mean, that's God's way of thinking. In verse 16, if a false witness arises against any man to testify against him of wrongdoing, then both men in the controversy shall stand before the Eternal, before the priest and the judges who serve in those days, and the judges shall make diligent inquiry. And indeed, if the witness is a false witness who has testified falsely against his brother, then you shall do to him as he thought to have done to his brother. So you shall put the evil person out from among you. This is the way God thinks. But yet we have rulings by our courts that are just almost rewarding the perpetrators and punishing the victims. But it says here, you'll do to him as he thought to do to his brother. In Deuteronomy 22, in verse 1, Deuteronomy 22, verse 1, you shall not see your brother's ox or his sheep going astray and hide yourself from them. You shall certainly bring them back to your brother. I was telling my wife, I said, man, I stand guilty before God. Because our neighbor's barn, a piece of tin, he doesn't live there, it started flapping in the wind. Well, if you know what that does to a tin barn. And I'm like, there, I see the tin flapping. Do I get a hammer and something and go over there and fix that? Or do I let it sit there and flap itself to death? Well, I had other more important things to do. The next time I looked out there, the wind had ripped that thing. It was almost ripped halfway to its hanging. You know, but God says if you see your brother's ox or his sheep go astray, or if you know your brother can't do it and he's got his water lines broke out there and it's flooding his yard and he's on vacation, I mean, what do you do? Say, boy, he's going to have a wet yard when he gets home. No, he says, you do what you can. He says, you bring them back to your brother. And if your brother is not near you, if he's on vacation or whatever, or if you do not know him, then you shall bring it to your own house, and it shall remain with you until your brother seeks it. Then you shall restore it. And it goes on to say, you do the same with any animal that... That is one of God's statutes. I mean, that's the way God thinks. And I know in this busy world, it's just easy to drive by and let things happen to your brother. Another one in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. In verse 10, I don't know, I may be in the wrong place. The Apostle Paul says, "For even when we were with you, we commanded you this, if anyone will not work, neither shall he eat." And yet it seems that we've gotten in this mode now where you take from those that work and you give it to those who do not work. But, you know, people need to learn to work. And we're not talking about disabled. We're not talking about orphans and widows and people that can't not provide. We're talking about the couch potatoes that are watching football instead of working. Or whatever. But, you know, we need to understand how God thinks. That was my point. It's just we need to understand. And we only can do it by renewing and continuing to think about those things. Because now is our time. In 1 Peter chapter 4. Because God's statutes and judgments are going to be a part of every person's life someday. God is not going to change. As we heard, God is consistent. 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 17. "For the time has come for judgment to begin at the house of God, and if it begins with us first, what will be the end of those who do not obey the gospel of God?" It begins now with us. And we've got to be applying it now in our life. And then it's going to be applied to everyone else. And, of course, if they don't obey, and if we don't obey, then we're going to suffer the consequences of that. But it does begin with us. Because in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, 2 Corinthians chapter 5. Whether people like it or not, this is going to happen. 1 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 9. "Therefore we make it our aim, whether present or absent, to be..." I don't know. Am I in the right place? Okay, yeah, "Therefore we make it our aim, whether present or absent, to be well-pleasing to him. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may receive the thing done in the body according to what he has done, whether good or bad." So that's what our life's about, is whether we're doing good or bad, we're learning to live by God's statutes and judgments. And all of judgment is coming to everyone. As Jesus said, you know, it'd be more tolerable for Sodom in the day of judgment than certain areas. Their day of judgment is coming. And in 2 Peter, verse 2 and verse 4, or what did I say? 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 4. Says, "For if God did not spare the angels who sinned, but cast them down to hell, a condition of restraint, and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved for judgment, and did not spare the ancient world, but saved Noah, one of the eight people, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood on the world of the ungodly, and turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them to destruction, making them an example to those afterward who would live ungodly, and delivered righteous Lot, who was oppressed with the filthy conduct of the wicked." And I hope that we feel that way, that we're like we're oppressed by this conduct, or in other words, it weighs on us. And it bothers us, as it did Lot, to see how the world is going, because we understand God's way, and we don't just understand that this is the way it is, we understand why, and that it is good. In verse 8, for that righteous man dwelling among them tormented his righteous soul from day to day by seeing and hearing their lawless deeds. It was like it tormented him to see that. And Jude chapter 6, or verse 6, no chapter, only one chapter. In verse 6, and the angels who did not keep their proper domain but left their own habitation, he has reserved in everlasting chains under darkness for the judgment of the great day. They weren't satisfied with what God had given them and their responsibilities. As Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities around them in similar manner to these, having given themselves over to sexual immorality and gone after strange flesh, are set forth as an example, suffering the vengeance of eternal fire. Of course, the fire is still not burning there, but they suffered the eternal vengeance of it. So, you know, the world seems to be racing, not just running or crawling, but racing away from God's statutes and judgments and just His way of thinking. But in reality, we need to be racing the other way toward God's statutes and judgments. More understanding, as we heard this morning, as we increase understanding that's been polluted and distorted by men and by the spirit world. And be able to see through the propaganda of this world. And there is lots of propaganda. Propaganda of evolution, of God's laws, of what is right and what is wrong. We see people going all kinds of defense of murderers, child molesters, thieves, and yet the victims are just almost unheard. Abortions, that's okay. The truly innocent has no right. We need to see through the you know, just the subtle teachings of the world and keep reminding ourselves about movies and TV and the education system, how the underlining effort is to discredit God. And, you know, get more involved in learning of God's way. You know, learning of His statutes, His judgments, because they reveal God's own mind. That's how God thinks. That's how He is. And of course, we're to become like God. Well, I just hope that all your days will be glorious in the understanding of God's statutes and judgments.